welcome once again to The Cinephiles, where each week we enter the world of a great film and explore its ideas, its history, the filmmakers, and the influence it has on us today. My name is Steve Morris. I'm a filmmaker and directing teacher in Los Angeles, California.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. My name is John Rocha. I'm a actor, voiceover artist, and host of shows all around town, LA.
And we're lucky once again to have as our special guest, Victoria Garcia Kelleher. Vicky, welcome back to The Cinephiles.
Thank you for having me. So much fun last time.
It was so much fun. And today, as soon as I mentioned this film to Vicky, I won't say that she actually jumped onto my head and said, I must do this film, but it was pretty
it's one of my favorite. I can pretty much verbatim every line. I know every line. I love it so much.
Yeah, I think we could have an alternate Cinephiles where you and I just try see how much of the movie we could actually do.
Amazing.
The movie is 1988's When Harry Met Sally, the archetype, I think, of the modern romantic comedy.
Yep.
It's starring Billy Crystal, Meg Ryan, Carrie Fisher, and the amazing but late, sadly late, Bruno Kirby, directed by Rob Reiner and written by the also sadly late. Late is a weird
phrase. Yeah, you're using late.
Everybody's dying. Yeah.
Passed away?
Dead.
Oh, my lord.
Croaked.
Dead.
Moved on.
These
transitioned.
Yeah. Shuffled off the mortal coil.
Transitioned to wherever it is we go after this.
The name, I still haven't said her name. Nora Ephron.
Nora Ephron.
Right.
Yeah, amazing screenwriter.
Yes.
So Vicky, you say you love this film.
Love
How did you
so
come
much.
To it? Did you see it in the theater when it came out?
I think I saw it 7 times in the theater.
Wow.
Yeah, but let's just to give you a level, I also saw Beaches 9 times in the theater.
That's fair.
And Titanic 5 times in the theater. Do you know how many hours that is in a theater
that
for
is
Titanic?
A lot of, that's at least
Jesus.
A week.
Jesus. Yeah.
That's at least a week.
Yes, I love this movie beyond what's acceptable, really.
So of those three, which have you gone back to see the most?
When Harry Met Sally is definitely my number. That's the one I showed my niece because I'm like, here's a movie you should see. And then I would say Beaches and then Titanic.
That makes sense.
They're remaking Beaches.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah, but
really?
Adina
With
Menzel.
Who? Queen Latifah and
Adina
okay.
Menzel. And for Lifetime. So, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird, right? I don't know how to feel about
that. I don't know if
that.
Adina makes it any better.
Well, I love her voice.
I know.
She's
watch her do anything.
Gorgeous voice. So, John, When Harry Met Sally.
Yes.
Yeah, how did you first come to this film?
I'm sure it was on a date. Back in high school, first year of college. What year? 88?
88.
So, yeah, maybe back in high school, first year of college, I'm sure I took someone to see it because it was, I knew immediately from the trailers, I must see this film because I was a massive Billy Crystal fan.
Oh, yeah.
From like Soap on.
Sure.
Yeah,
I thought you were going to say, you must bring a woman because that's going to get me laid.
Well, anything that works, I suppose, when you're at that age.
Me kissed.
When you're at that age, you're discovering it all.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
But I absolutely fell in love with it. I don't remember what happened on the date at all, but I know that I love the film and I've gone back to it. I've owned it in every version it
me
comes
too.
In DVD, VHS, and Blu-ray because.
Me too.
It's
I've
just
had,
such
I've
a,
had everyone.
Yeah, it's just such a tight film. And I remember just loving it so much and falling in love with Meg Ryan. Like, you fall in love with Meg Ryan in that film. She is so.
Totally.
The perfect woman that you would like to find yourself with for the rest of your life. She is particular, she is finicky, whatever, but she's got a sweet heart, and that's what you want when you come home to someone.
And wildcat in bed, I'm sure.
I'm sure. For just from the diner scene alone, you
right?
know you're taken care of there.
At least the show is going to be great. Whether or not she's really enjoying
she's
it, you don't
true.
Get to know.
She's doing good. I also fell in love with Harry Connick Jr. and that whole music genre
absolutely.
That was like completely new. I'm sure... Everybody older was like, he's doing Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
But to me, I was like, what kind of singing is this?
Right.
It's very clear. Our love is here to stay. Not for a year. Forever and a day.
I loved it so
and
much.
He's 20 years old.
20 years old
when he made that.
Yep.
Yeah. For me, I mean, we'll talk about a lot of like, this is my movie, but so I was always the friend guy. So I always was in love with women who were my friends. I was living with a woman at the time who I was not so secretly in love with.
Mm-hmm.
She and I had been friends since high school. And 1988 is the year I met Karen.
Wow.
Who I stayed friends with for 3 years, desperately in love with her, and she is now my wife.
Yeah.
So
they're still just friends, though.
Right.
A lot of thoughts just went through my head, and none of them were appropriate. But so this is our movie. There's no question
that
When Harry Met Sally is Karen in my movie. And of course, when watching it again, we watched it again for this podcast. It's so great when you watch a movie that you haven't seen in a while and you're like, this is still a perfect still great. Film.
It hasn't aged a day.
It is a fantastic
it's
movie.
It's because, you know, and I feel like Nora Ephron really did that. Because I think what women want and...
Yeah, that's a good film.
Like, not so much it's complicated, but the like... She creates an era almost, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, it's like a kind of a tone that is so ageless mm-hmm. and so relatable. And I mean, the music, the visuals of her pulling the car up in New York and, yeah. you know, so beautiful. My niece liked it too. And she's 15 and wow. she gets bored real quick. And she really, like, although she said it wasn't enough romance for her.
Oh, well, that's how we did it back then. Yeah. We weren't so overt.
So that's an interesting thing of like, what is the nature of romance?
Right.
Because to me, like I said, I think this is the model for the romantic comedy.
Yeah.
Like if It Happened One Night is the model for the romantic comedy in the 30s.
Sure.
This is the model for the modern romantic comedy. And both It Happened One Night and this largely is not a story about people getting together. There's conflict and there's arguments. They don't like each other at first. There's a mm-hmm. long process. The actual romance happens in a very small amount of time, depending on what you define as romance.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Well, the thing I want to add to what Vicky said too is the Nora Ephron writes in a way that is if you were remotely vulnerable as a man, mm-hmm. you're accessible to how a woman thinks.
Right.
And I think a lot of people try to write for women, both male and female, and don't quite nail it because they try to make women too manly or they try to make men too female.
Yeah.
And you lose it in mm-hmm. the translation. And I think what's important in this film, you see how Sally thinks. She has not in any way betrayed. She doesn't become a damsel in distress. Like when she has that moment where she breaks down.
When Joe gets married.
Yeah, when Joe gets married. It's logical because that is an emotional thing you feel. How you can move on to the next guy and next woman rather so quickly and marry that woman.
Yeah.
It's you. No matter how you're built, it's such a rejection of you. I mean, I had that experience with my ex who got divorced. She found out a year later that he had gotten remarried and she flipped out for a week. Like she just couldn't handle it. And that's what happens.
Yeah.
You know, and it was so
but
logical.
She also managed to find a man like the conversations they had to me, that was groundbreaking.
Oh, yeah.
Like him saying, well, yeah, you sleep with her. The mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't a great date. Well, I slept at her house. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We slept together. And the woman's just like, what do you mean you slept together?
Well, let's go back a little and talk about sort of the genesis of this movie, because this is really the heart of it, which is that this movie comes out in a lot of ways from conversations between Nora Ephron and Rob Reiner.
Right.
Who I love.
And I will argue, because what's, you know, normally when we do these podcasts, we usually pick kind of one person, the director, and we talk about their history and how they got to where they got to.
Right.
And now I think we have three and really more major characters coming to this. One is Nora Ephron,
yep.
whose whole career is fascinating. I mean, she, you know, as a writer, as an article writer, and then she's married to Carl Bernstein, which is like, you know, and then becoming a screenwriter, writing these great screenplays, working with
Heartburn.
Mike Nichols.
Ugh.
Yeah, Heartburn. Yeah, right. And then you also, her whole story, in fact, there's a really good documentary on Nora Ephron, which
great.
Is worth seeing, definitely worth seeing.
What's it called?
It's right, what's it called? It's on HBO.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know about it.
But, and then you have Rob Reiner, who comes from a storied Hollywood family. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy, you know, his parents, Carl Reiner, for the Show of Shows and Dick Van Dyke Show, and their best friend is Mel Brooks and Anne Bancroft, right. who are out their house all the time. And that's the environment he grows up on.
It's
goes
amazing.
To All in the Family, where he's an actor, mm-hmm. and then married to Penny Marshall. And apparently his house, when he was married to Penny Marshall, was the party house for a generation mm-hmm. throughout the 70s. And that was huge part of that community with Albert Brooks and all these other people,
right.
Robin Williams, and you know, everyone that was that age in the 70s, in the late 70s, came there.
Yeah.
And then you have Billy Crystal. And Billy Crystal is this, you know, as you said, Soap, because I love Soap.
Oh,
I remember
loved.
Watching Soap. Billy Crystal is supposed to be in the original cast of Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't make it in the cast, you know, because he gets dropped at the night of the show, I think.
Yeah.
You know, he has this huge career that's very complicated before we get to When Harry Met Sally. You know, much less Barry Sonnenfeld as the DP. I mean, you have all these amazing people coming together for this film. But the main pair is Rob Reiner and Nora Ephron.
Mm-hmm.
And Rob Reiner has become divorced from Penny Marshall. He's very much the Billy Crystal character.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And Nora Ephron is very much the Meg Ryan character. And it's, you know, because that's how she orders. That really is how Nora Ephron
that's
orders.
That's how I order.
And you do a beautiful
job.
One of the world's great orderers.
I feel that I've been... Go ahead, Steve. I don't want to.
Well, I just it's there. They had 3 years of conversations about what men and women are really like that lead to getting to this film.
I think if you see this film at an early enough age, it really does give you the information you need in certain situations.
Definitely.
You know, Rob Reiner is telling her how men think, mm-hmm. and Nora is telling him how women think. And it's and both of them are surprised by the things that come out. And we see that in their conversations in the film.
And at the time, I mean, it seems strange to say now, but the idea of a man and a woman being friends and not that this was a crazy idea. And Rob Reiner talks about it as if this is a crazy idea.
Yeah.
And I think our world has changed in some ways where that seems less crazy. Some ways it hasn't. Mm-hmm. Some ways we're still really different. And the you know, does sex get in the way and all these sort of questions? Because this is what I would call a thesis film. A thesis film is where we're going to present a question at the beginning of the movie. Can men and women be friends? Or will the sex part always get in the way? And now we're going to spend a whole movie exploring that question and come up
and
with
the answer is no.
The answer is no.
Because we're going to get together. Yeah. I love when in the beginning he's like, men and women can never be friends. And she was like, what?
You realize, of course, that we can never be friends.
Why not?
What I'm saying is, and this is not a come on in any way, shape, or form, is that men and women can't be friends because the sex part always gets in the way.
That's not true. I have a number of men friends and there is no sex involved.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
You only think you do.
You're saying I'm having sex with these men without my knowledge?
No, what I'm saying is they all want to have sex with you.
They do not.
Do too.
They do not.
Do too.
How do you know?
Because no man can be friends with a woman that he finds attractive. He always wants to have sex with her.
So you're saying that a man can be friends with a woman he finds unattractive?
No, you pretty much want to nail him, too.
And that's kind of what ends up happening in our lives. We're friends with, you know, our friends are either married or you're married. There's not a lot of just men and women who stay friends who haven't had some kind of sexual attraction to one another. Because if you like each other as people, you probably are going to be attracted to them.
Sarah and I are the greatest exception ever. Our friend Sarah and I.
So far.
Yes. It's been 20 years.
I know, but I have hope.
She's still one of my greatest friends, and I have no interest ever in sleeping with her. And that's why I enjoy the movie, too, so much now as I get older.
Yeah.
Those conversations, I have those kinds of conversations with Sarah without that thing happening that happens between Harry and Sally, which is great. It's great to have that
kind
of thing.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
The thing that Rob Reiner says in one of the interviews.
Because I've never done that. I just want to say real quick, Steve. Yeah. I've never done that. I don't know personally my opinion. I've never become friends with someone and then dated them. I always know within 30 seconds if I'm going to date you, have sex with you, or have a relationship with you. And so it's fascinating to watch this movie because this is my favorite romantic comedy, period. Yet it's nothing I can actually, I've never experienced. But that speaks to the writing and the direction and the acting.
Yeah, and for me, it's like, yep.
Yeah, right. It's your story, of course.
Yeah.
I felt like Billy Crystal, I mean, like Harry wanted to sleep with her right away.
At the beginning, yeah.
I felt like that was, and then he only didn't when he was in a relationship.
You pretty much want to nail them too. I mean, like, you know, he did say.
Yeah.
It's very clear that he wants to sleep with her. And he does. He does come on to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In that opening sequence. Which, by the way, the drive in the car.
The best.
Is so
good.
The grapes. Sally's hair.
Oh, her hair's great. Yeah. That 80s hair.
And one of the things that's interesting about Harry and Sally, I think, which is something that, again, is always sort of, this is the things that Hollywood gets wrong. Mm. They're very strange people.
Mm-hmm.
They are really odd.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Harry is dark and sarcastic and nihilistic and cruel.
Reads the last page of the book so he won't.
Yeah.
And depressed.
Yeah.
And very shallow about the women he sleeps with.
Mm-hmm.
And and Sally is peculiar and quirky and fun. And I had to. So Meg Ryan, this is the beginning for her.
Yeah.
She was a soap opera actress before this. And her performance, I think, is among one of the great comedic performances I can think of.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, she had done Top Gun.
Yes.
That's me, honey.
Take me to bed or lose me forever.
Show me the way home.
There are like certain people where I go, who's that person?
Yeah.
Like she was in it for 3 minutes. You know, I mean, she was really not in it much. Take me to bed or lose me forever.
Right.
And I remember going, who's that person?
Yeah.
She's really interesting. The other one was weirdly Ellen Pompeo in that little movie that,
Moonlight.
Yes. And I remember thinking Moonlight Mile. I remember thinking, who is that
Me
woman?
Me too. Immediately.
Yeah. And then there aren't a lot of those.
Same thing with Zellweger and Jerry Maguire. All of a sudden you're like, who is that?
Who is that?
Brad Pitt and Thelma and Louise.
Well, yeah. But everybody thought that, and not because they were like, there's a fantastic actor.
But hugely charismatic.
Oh my God. Yes. So charismatic. Yes. Yeah. Dude.
But you're right, and I had seen Meg in a small little film called Promised Land with Kiefer Sutherland and Jason Gedrick and Tracy Pollan. And it's a small little 80s film. Hardly anybody's ever seen it. It's not even on Blu-ray.
I remember it.
But she was great in it, and she showed a darkness in her character that I was like, wow, this is an actress. So when she showed up in When Harry Met Sally, this is a woman. And that's what speaks to the I enjoy about the movie is you see them go through the stages. And I don't want to jump the gun in how you're coordinating this, Steve, but like,
this is very uncoordinated. So sometimes I have actually a plan, but right. This is going to go.
He's
where
like,
it's
Vicky's going to be there.
Vicky's
Let's
on the
show. Just forget it.
This is like trying to segue for the first time. I am extremely uncoordinated, but like to me, it was, that's what I love about the film is the progression of them and there it's believable. And as a 45-year-old man watching this, it's even more rich for me because I can absolutely identify with every stage that they go through. Whereas when I saw it in 18, I'm just watching people as they get older and whatever. I can't really relate to it. Now you bring your own life experience to it and the conversations and the embarrassment. The fight they have after the wagon wheel coffee table is so brilliant.
Oh, my God.
She says to him,
You don't have to express every feeling the second you have it.
True. I've had people say that to me. And you're like, I remember that moment.
And yet he is right. Because the wagon wheel fights, much of marriage are wagon wheel
fights. Yes, that's true.
Like, that is what you're going to argue about.
Hashtag wagon wheel fights.
Yes. Yes. Totally true.
I still can't get over. Well, first of all, let's keep Meg Ryan. In a way it made her and in a way it broke her because
I agree.
I thought after that
it peaks.
Mm-hmm. It's a pinnacle comedic thing. But then later she did Courage. The one where she's the military.
Yeah, Courage Under Fire.
Courage Under Fire,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, with Matt Damon and Denzel.
And she was, you know, amazing. And I feel like her, when she played the alcoholic with Andy Garcia.
When a man loves a woman, yeah.
She was, again, absolutely so good and given very little opportunity to keep doing that. Like,
she's great, but she's always going to be Sally.
You know? Or Sleeps in Seattle. She's going to be Nora Ephron. Yeah. Whoever Nora Ephron made her, it kind of... It's where we stopped her. You
know, she laid the groundwork for Sandra Bullock. She laid the groundwork for Sandra Bullock, and Bullock wins the Oscar when really Meg should have had it. Should have had that one.
Oh my gosh, she really should have.
I want to go back to Rob Reiner a bit because I want to get back to like sort of the origins of the film. To me, Rob Reiner's first eight films are among the greatest first eight films. I put it up against anybody.
Wow. Spinal Tap.
Because it goes Spinal Tap, The Sure Thing, which I love.
Oh, yeah. The John Cusack film.
Yeah. Stand By Me. Princess Bride. When Harry Met Sally.
Wow.
Misery. American President. And A Few Good Men.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's his. And I think there's one other movie in there. It's like North is in there. Something that's not as good.
Yes.
But that's an
spectacular.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And they're all really different.
Yeah,
he invents the mockumentary essentially with Spinal Tap, and then he does this also a romantic comedy very much in the It Happened One Night with Sure Thing.
Yeah,
then a coming of age film, then The Princess Bride, which we will be doing on the set at
Absolutely.
Some point. Then When Harry Met Sally, then Misery, which is a really great scary Stephen King movie.
Watch it.
Still scars me. It still scars me.
I didn't watch it because I read the book and I know what happens. And I was like, I will not watch anybody be hobbled. I draw a line.
The inkling is...
The book is much more brutal, by the way.
I know, but
is
I can
really?
Take a book. I can take a book because somehow I think my mind does some editing that my eyes don't. Because I can read a book and no problem, but I see it and it's forever.
Misery is such a fantastically crafted movie. And then he essentially discovers Aaron Sorkin because the next two, because it's Few Good Men and American President, both Aaron Sorkin movies.
And I mean, think of the people in these movies. He discovered Robin Wright. She was a soap actress.
Yes.
Actually, Julia Roberts was supposed to be in that role or was auditioned for the princess. God. I know, right?
Thank God it's Robin Wright.
Kathy Bates, right? I mean, that was...
That's off stage. That was off stage in New York. Yep.
He has an eye... Well, and Christopher Guest and all... Yeah. I mean, every one of these movies has people in it that are like... monumental.
Well, he is one of those directors who loves actors.
Yeah.
Loves working with, and from what...
Because he was an actor.
Because he was
it.
An actor, yeah. And there's certain people there's certain directors who are well-known assholes who are brutal and cruel and disrespectful to actors and might still be great directors. Mm-hmm. And that is not who I want to be. Like, I teach directing. Mm-hmm. And I'm always trying to teach the values of take care of the people that you work with. They're your best asset. You know, be gentle. Create a supportive environment. And that seems like the kind of director Rob Reiner is.
Aside, just because it's topical, Gary Marshall just passed, and he was a friend. I played softball on a couple of the softball teams, and we recently just did like a toast. He was one of those kind of directors.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he was,
More loved actors, loved, mm-hmm. you know, and he said, the quote somebody told me was, "It's nice to be important, but it's important to be nice."
Yeah.
And that was kind of, that's the kind of director that I envision Rob Reiner is just
and it's same Rob
era.
Reiner's
brother-in-law, right.
You know,
yeah,
like they were hanging out together, so it's it's not, and it's funny, one of the other directors that's very much from my understanding like that is Ron Howard,
yeah,
who also, you know, was studied under Gary Marshall,
yeah, yeah. They all came from Happy Days,
yeah.
Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, you name it,
yeah.
Well, it's so great to see, to watch what he did in those 8 films. You see the progression of a director, and you see how far he could take it. Like, like to me, A Few Good Men is the end of the run that you were saying, but it's also like everything comes together for him as a director.
I think American Presence after, but
well, even
still,
that is grand in its scope.
That was like,
yeah. Yeah. And it's so, but with this film, I just think the ability that if you break down these 8 films, the ability to nail each one in a different way is such a great point you bring up, Steve, how he lays the groundwork, how he's building and getting stronger as a director, yet he's still nailing it as he's getting stronger. And that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's like watching an athlete just have these consistently good seasons until he finally hits the pinnacle.
Well, and he's choosing to switch sports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because most, you know, it's like if you look at the first several Steven Spielberg movies, they're different, but they're very much Steven Spielberg movies.
Yeah. Right.
He didn't switch from comedy to a horror movie to a fantasy movie. No one.
Right.
I don't know anybody other than Rob Reiner who went, I'm doing a romantic comedy, you know?
He didn't.
He was like, this is what I'm interested in, and that's what he went to make.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Billy Crystal. He was not a movie star.
No.
No.
And can anyone think of going into a Hollywood meeting and saying, this is our romantic lead of our new romantic comedy, Billy Crystal?
Yeah.
You know?
I know he'd only, like, he'd done one of my favorite action comedies, Running Scared, that never got a sequel, which should have.
Wait, him with Charles Grodin?
No, Gregory Hines.
What am I thinking?
Midnight Run?
You're thinking Midnight Run.
Yeah, which is great.
I adore Midnight Run.
Yeah, but
I thought Running Scared's after this. Is it before this?
Is it 89?
I don't know.
I thought it was 87. But maybe I'm wrong. But either way, I mean, you're right, Steve.
It's right around the same time.
He was not a known name other than being on Saturday Night Live.
Well, he killed it on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Because he didn't get on Saturday Night Live when he was originally supposed to.
86.
Went and did so.
86.
Oh, so it is before. So he does that right after Saturday Night Live.
Right.
I think. And then he has a bit part in Princess Bride.
Yes.
And then where
he's in hilarious. He's in Spinal Tap as well.
Yeah. He shows up in Spinal Tap.
Right.
Mime is money.
And they're... he and Rob are buddies because he came in to play Rob Reiner's best friend or Meathead's best friend on All in the Family.
Right.
And they became, and in fact, Rob Reiner and Billy Crystal would call each other from bed like,
oh my God.
Oh, yeah. Like that.
Like Harry and Sally do. That's Rob Reiner and Billy Crystal.
Wow.
They would call each other and Rob Reiner would moan on the phone and moan himself to sleep. That is Rob Reiner.
That sounds right.
So their friendship is a huge, and I think they were maybe both divorced at the time, the leading up to this movie. So their conversations about being divorced men and all these things, a lot of that is in the movie, you know, part of the movie and in the Bruno Kirby relationship.
Yeah. For me, it was the development, because I had seen Running Scared. Then I saw one of my favorite, the thing is, I have such a love for him because I will see him in anything. I even saw Mr. Saturday Night, which was the end of the honeymoon for me.
Yeah, that's...
And that was the end of it. That was when he shot... That was Icarus Into the Sun, man. But Memories of Me is one of my favorite quiet films.
I love...
Alan,
really
good. Right?
Yeah.
If you're a fan of comics or comedy, Alan King and Billy Crystal are fantastic
so
in that
good.
Movie. And powerful. Like, I cry
cried
every time.
So hard.
Every
I still
time.
Would cry. I love that.
As soon as he calls the studio at the end, I cry every time.
I haven't seen that in so
that
long.
That is him building. And that's 87. Then Princess Bride, like you said. And then he builds into this. And this is my... to me, it's like, this is him. Like, he's in his prime at this point, you know, as an actor and as a presence on screen. And I had been watching him in these smaller films, like becoming this big cheerleader. So when he got to When Harry Met Sally, I just sat in and enjoyed his work. And he's so... This is the thing about Billy, and it's a shame that now that he's older, he can't really touch these places, but the vulnerability behind the anger, he has that anger.
Yeah.
And you see it in When Harry Met. Like, when he's caught doing the Surrey with the fringe on top moment, he is embarrassed, and then when he flips out on her later, you just see that he still has that anger, you know, but the vulnerability is a great combination.
He did do a one-man show recently.
Yeah, 700 Sundays.
Did you watch it?
Yes, I saw it on HBO.
He did a great job of...
Absolutely.
He's just not getting the vehicles anymore, right. I think, because apparently once you get past, you know, 50...
You're not,
And for men. Women, it's 26.
Yeah.
But for men, it's 50.
All right, Shuma.
We're not interested anymore. We're just done. We're done with you.
It's totally true. And particularly in terms of comedy. You know, because, this goes, like, Hollywood wants you to be what they think you are.
Yeah.
And when you start changing or growing older.
Who doesn't? Let's be clear.
We want you to be the thing. You know, this is, you talked about Meg Ryan. That's clearly what happened to Meg Ryan. Yeah. They want her to still be Sally. And you know what? She can't be that anymore.
She can't. Because it's weird if you're that way and you're in your 50s and you're still like, oh, what? Men are crazy. Like, then we just feel like something's wrong with you, honey. You need to...
Well, there's this weird reaction right now to Renee Zellweger in the new Bridget Jones movie.
Oh, God.
I haven't heard.
Yeah. That trailer
it's not... It's off the topic of this show. But,
the idea
she's
being...
struggling
you get,
with the same thing.
Yeah.
Who, as she grows older,
pigeonholed.
Who can she be?
And I mean, but the funny thing to me is always still that Meg Ryan is 5'8". I will never get over that.
Oh,
in my brain, she is 5'1". Like, I just do not think of her as a tall person. She's cute. She seems like she'd be tiny.
Yeah.
She has lethal levels of cuteness in Harry's South.
Oh, my goodness.
It's the little tiny things she does, little ways that she, the particular way she moves things around, things she does with her face, her hair, just all so... endlessly fascinating. And
when she's crying. And she's sobbing.
So this is something Rob Reiner talks about, which is the comedy cry. Which is the comedy cry. And the masters of the comedy cry are Lucille Ball.
Yep.
And then one that Rob Reiner got to know, which is Mary Tyler Moore.
Mm.
Like, Mary Tyler Moore is a master of... And then you see this... He and Nora Ephron talk quite a bit. Will Meg Ryan be able to do the comedy cry? Because it's a weird thing to have to do. Mm-hmm. To be fully, honestly, completely emotional
and
in this moment.
Big.
And big and real.
And not try to hide it.
And not, and, but be funny.
If you could take him back right now, would you?
No. But why didn't he want to marry me? What's the matter with me?
Nothing.
I'm difficult.
You're challenging.
I'm too structured. I'm completely closed off.
But in a good way.
No, no, no. I drove him away. And I'm gonna be 40.
When?
Someday.
In 8 years.
But it's there. It's just sitting there like this big dead end. And it's not the same for men. Charlie Chaplin had babies when he was 73.
Yeah, but he was too old to pick them up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that cry is...
one of the funniest
hilarious.
Things ever. And I'm going to be 40!
When?
In
8 years.
But it's out there! It's out there!
I like when she goes, I'm difficult. That's my favorite line.
I'm difficult.
It's just like, no. It's brilliant.
Still she was sexy, which was so weird.
Yep,
like,
very much so.
You don't think of her sexy. And then they have sex and she gets up and is like, can I get you water or whatever? And I'm like, wow, you would not. Well, she's not sexual by her energy in this movie is not in any way sexual until they have sex.
Right.
And then you're like, wow.
And that shot of her waking up with a happy, contented face.
And he looks like...
And his face is perfect filmmaking. Because, and this is, you know, I actually want to go into... I want to change topics a little bit. But it'll relate to this, which is this movie contains what is listed as one of the funniest lines of all time, which is "I'll have what she's having."
Yeah. Yes.
Which is, and I want to talk about it because to me, this the origin of that line is the perfect example of why movies are a collaborative experience.
Yeah.
And in particular, how this movie is a collaborative experience. So as we said, Nora Ephron is interviewing Rob Reiner and the producer whose name has gone out of my head about what it's like to be a man and men dating. And in these interviews, Rob tells her exactly what Billy Crystal says, which is, you're sleep with a woman, now you're trying to figure out how long you have to stay with her right. before you go out, and you right. invented the excuse, I have a early morning squash yeah. game, this or that. And Nora Ephron's reaction is exactly what Sally's reaction is, are you really thinking that?
Yeah.
And they have essentially that exact dialogue, and Nora goes, well, that has to go in the movie. And mm. Rob goes, wait a minute, if we just revealed this thing about us, you have to reveal something about you, because it has to be even.
Yeah. Right.
And she says, oh, well, you mean like the fact that most women fake orgasms? And Rob's reaction is exactly what Harry's reaction is.
Well, maybe.
Not with me. And she goes, and then Nora says Sally's line, which is, well, every woman says that they do this. So yeah. The odds are. And then what Rob does is he gets up there at the Castle Rock offices, and he gets up and goes to what at the time you would call the secretarial pool, goes to all the women there and says, come into my office, in his big booming Rob Reiner voice, drags all these women to his office and interrogates them about their orgasms and whether or not they fake them.
Wow. Viable offense nowadays.
Yeah, of course it is.
Big time fire.
Maybe not still in Hollywood, but certainly everywhere else.
And they all say that they have faked orgasms.
Yeah.
And then wow. and he goes, okay, this has to go into the movie. And so they write this scene. But the scene doesn't have anyone faking an orgasm in the scene, and it's not set in a restaurant. So then they get to rehearsal, and Meg Ryan says, well, if I'm saying this, why don't I just fake an orgasm? So that
was her idea.
That's her idea.
Wow.
So you see, this is why it's yeah. all of them together. Then Rob says, well, if you're going to fake an orgasm, then we have to have it in a public place, like a restaurant.
Yeah.
And then Billy Crystal says, well, if you have it in a restaurant and she fakes an orgasm, someone has to say, I'll have what she's having. That's Billy Crystal it's comes up in that
funny.
Moment. Yeah. And then Rob says, I know the perfect person to do that.
My mother.
Which is my mom. And so, and what I love about that story is that is a collaboration.
Yeah.
Is that we don't get it's because everyone just thinks about that line. Isn't that line funny? And it's like, no, that line is built on a structure of collaboration that cannot exist without all of these brilliant people yeah. working together to get the joke.
Absolutely. Yeah.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
You know, John, I don't have to tell you that I had a pretty rough month last month. I had family commitments, work stuff was a bit overwhelming, and frankly, my battery felt drained. And one of the ways that I looked to charge up that battery came through therapy.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve, you and I have both spoken about our therapy journeys here on the show. Certainly for me, one of the things that got me back in recharged, got me back connected to life, got me back ready to go and take control of my life was therapy. Once you go deep and find out what's going on, it's amazing how much more energetic, how much more you're willing to take part in your life. And therapy helps you do that for sure.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, I'd give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/cinephiles today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/cinephiles.
Well, and I think I read that Meg Ryan was nervous about the comedy element of it, especially because Billy Crystal was so improv yeah, oriented yeah. and she was not, did not want to do improv. Like that was right. kind of part of it. And that's why when we said the waiter, there's a, in my poppycosh.
There's too much pepper
in my poppycosh. That was an improvised line and she didn't know they were going to be improvising and he does it. And if you watch, she looks off camera to see Rob Reiner. Like, and you remember she kind of goes like, and looks over she's looking at Rob Reiner to be like, are we going to keep rolling?
Rob gives her the circular finger, keep going gesture. And she goes, okay.
And then she just goes, pepper in my poppycosh. And she tries to do it and does it terribly.
I have decided that for the rest of the day, we are going to talk like this.
Like this?
No, please, to repeat after me. Pepper.
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 Pepper. Waiter, there is too much pepper on my paprikash.
Waiter, there is too much pepper
on my paprikash.
On my paprikash.
But I would be proud to partake of your pecan pie.
Oh, no.
But I would be proud...
But I would be proud.
To partake. Of your pecan pie.
Of your pecan pie.
Pecan pie.
Pecan pie.
Pecan pie.
Pecan pie.
It's so, I knew that moment was always really special in my brain, so right. specifically. And when right. I found that out later, I'm like, well, of course, because, you know, improv, when it works, it's just, you can't mimic it. There's no...
Yeah.
there's no, you know, when it's just completely connected and there's nothing planned. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Oh, I love that
Some
line.
Of my favorite conversations are also with him and Bruno Kirby.
Oh.
As a man watching the film, these are conversations I have had with my male friends through the course of my life. And they are we haven't been power walking down in our nice tight little whatever they're wearing.
Oh my lord, 80s.
But you've definitely sat there and traded sexual experiences, and you're not trying to one up necessarily, but if you've got that card to play, you will play it. Like when he says, "I made a woman meow," that's such a great line, because
you made a woman meow.
Yeah, right?
And
I took her to a place that wasn't human.
To set it in a batting cage right? Well,
with kids waiting to come in
and being pissed at the kids. I put my quarters here, so brilliant. That's
I'm so glad you brought it up, because this is for those directors and screenwriters out there, locations and activities are the best things you can give your actors.
Absolutely.
And you see several of them. You see the speed walking is probably the least good one of them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The batting cage. So it's always can be hard for an actor to become natural and to give them an activity to do, and particularly when balls are flying at you. You literally have to deal with it. It's so natural, and there's so many little beats and things you can get out of it. And by the way, I don't remember which one it is, but Billy Crystal's right-handed. He had a bat left-handed for the scene.
Right, because they're facing each other.
And it just shows, by the way, Billy Crystal, really good athlete.
Yes.
Yes.
He's
also a huge baseball person.
Baseball person. And so you have that. You have the wave at the football game.
Yes.
Yep.
You know, and you could see that when you're first writing a screenplay, you go, oh, they're just sitting talking at a cafe. They're in a living room somewhere. Right. And it's a perfectly fine scene. But then you take the scene, you put it at the football game, and you have the wave going through.
Yeah.
Well, they're having this really emotional Mr. Zero new scene.
Then she tells me that somebody in her office is going to South America and she can sublet his apartment. I can't believe this. And the doorbell rings. I can sublet his apartment. The words are still hanging in the air, you know, like in a balloon attached to a mouth.
Like a cartoon.
Right. So I go to the door and there are moving men there. Now I start to get suspicious. I say, Helen, when did you call these movers? And she doesn't say anything. So I asked the movers, when did this woman book you for this gig? And they're just standing there, three huge guys, one of them wearing a T-shirt that says, "Don't fuck with Mr. Zero." So I said, "Helen, when did you make this arrangement?" She says, "A week ago." I said, "You've known for a week and you didn't tell me?" And she says, "I didn't want to ruin your birthday."
I mean, that whole scene is so well written, and it's actually really sad and just great. And the fact that we're at the football game doesn't take away the sadness, but it makes it funny.
Yeah.
And well, when I teach acting, and a lot of times we give somebody an activity as a way to access their right brain rather. So if you play catch with a ball as they're doing their scene. Because the part of your brain that has to be paying attention to catching the ball and doing that is your left brain, which wants to take over. It's the least creative side of you.
Right.
So the more you activate that, the more your right brain gets open access to actually be present, to be listening, to be available. So it's smart as an actor, too, to have an activity.
Absolutely. Mm. I do it in rehearsals all the time. When things are feeling a little stiff, it's like, let's go do this scene in a closet. Let's go run around. Let's go do something else to shake up that thing. Mm. I had a martial arts instructor that said a thing that I think totally applies to acting, which is that he said that we sort of see the world in two ways. One way is I'm in the moment talking to someone or reacting to someone, and I'm very connected to what's happening, but I don't have a good perspective on it. And the other one is the sort of top-down perspective where I can see everything that's going on, but I'm disconnected.
Right.
And that what he says is that when things are really going, he was describing in martial arts that you're sparring or something like that, is that when things are going well, you have both.
Yeah.
And you're seeing out of both of those perspectives simultaneously, you know, and it totally applies to acting, which is that I'm in the moment, I'm completely connected and real and reacting to things, and I know where the props are, I know how the scene is going, I know what's happening next, I understand how the audience is reacting, and I'm in control, and neither of those are interfering with them. But frequently what happens is you're only up in that up top one, thinking about things, and you're not in the moment. And adding this activity, suddenly it shakes you out of that, because you can't be thinking about that other stuff, because a baseball is coming at you.
Right.
So you have to deal with the baseball.
But even as simple as like rolling out the rug in his apartment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They're
it's just like
have an activity.
They're just because we're just, we're usually doing something in life, you know, we're usually doing something. So to have it be, you know, you're talking as you're like, you know, turn the rug this way. It's so much more to me what real life is about. What, like how we are, where we have our conversations. We're not usually sitting at a coffee table having all of our deep conversations, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And like another example, sometimes you can get an extra layer of emotion in it. One of them is Carrie Fisher is trying on the wedding dress.
Oh.
And
she's eating those M&Ms.
And she's eating M&Ms.
I love that.
And she's asking her, have you seen Harry? Has he seen someone?
Right.
And to combine, to juxtapose, I'm asking you about the guy that really deep down I love, and we, the audience, all knows that you're in love with him, while watching you try on the wedding dress. And Carrie Fisher has her own emotional things going on because she never thought she would be trying on this wedding dress, and now she is. And all of these layers about marriage and relationship and all this stuff is happening. And so the scene, you know, and you could have done that scene in a cafe.
Yeah.
But instead, it's now filled with all this other stuff because of where you put it.
Yeah.
You're right. You're right. I know you're right.
Well, so let's talk switch.
Let's talk
about Carrie Fisher. Let's talk about Carrie Fisher. This is what, you know, what occurred to me watching it this time. I was like, this is 6 years after Jedi.
Yeah.
It's not that long.
No.
And she, you know, she's Princess Leia.
Yeah.
And now she does this role where this is Carrie Fisher.
She's
such
a genius.
Oh, my God.
Have you ever read any of her books?
Yeah, I read Postcards from the Edge.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Delusions of Grandma.
I haven't read that one.
Her books are great.
I watched the one woman show she did on HBO. That was fantastic. Oh,
she's so...
she's biting satire.
The drinking, right?
Yeah, it's something to do about drinking.
She's so funny.
Yeah.
The Nora Ephron one, by the way, is Everything is Copy.
Oh, Everything is Copy.
Yeah,
That's right.
But
Wishful Drinking.
Wishful Drinking.
That's
Wishful Drinking. She was, I was in love with her watching that because.
God, she was so good.
Right, because she's so good. And she's so willing to talk about these things.
Yeah.
Right, Kathy Griffin has built a whole career doing that. But what Carrie does is deep dive. And when you deep dive with Carrie, it's awesome. If you let her take you by the nose, you will have a blast. You enjoy the ride. So much.
And I wonder, this must have been when she was with her gay husband.
Right. Yes, probably.
She was having a baby with the gay husband. And
well, again, and we go to the collaboration. Now, Nora Ephron is a great wit and a brilliant writer. But part of me just can't. I don't know this, but it's got to be some Carrie Fisher in there, too.
Right. Yeah, you know, I would think so, right?
Because she's so funny.
She's so funny.
The scene... two scenes I'd love to talk about. One scene is the scene at the restaurant with the date set up with Bruno Kirby.
Lord.
And them both going for the cab at the end.
Yes.
Is so perfectly constructed. Mm-hmm. As you built up these two characters, one is the guy who I've given up on relationships. I don't need to do that. And get Carrie Fisher with, he's never going to leave him.
Yeah.
He's never going to leave me.
Of course he's not.
You're right.
I know you're right.
I went through his pockets, okay?
Well, why do you go through his pockets?
You know what I found?
No, what?
They just bought a dining room table.
He and his wife just went out and spent $1,600 on a dining room table.
Where?
The point isn't where, Alice. The point is he's never going to leave her.
So what else is new? You've known this for 2 years.
You're right. You're right. I know you're right.
But this is what I want to touch on when you bring this up. I've been trying to say this for the last 10 minutes. What's so great about the activity stuff, what's so great about the
collaboration,
but what's so great about this happening here at this point, what you're bringing up here, this situation, it evokes New York. New York has the pace, the speed, the fast. You're always doing something. You cannot sit around in New York because the energy will lift you out of your chair and shove you out the door. New York's energy is no energy like I've ever experienced in my entire life. I mean, there are moments where I stand, when I go to visit New York now, where I stand and I have to hold the wall of whatever building I'm at because I feel the speed of the city, and I'm so not used to that in LA or in Virginia or in Florida. So when I get to New York, and so what the film does for me, the scenery is obviously amazing, all the places they shoot, but the speed of the film, things that are happening, it makes you feel like these are people in constant motion.
Yeah.
And that's how New York is, in constant motion.
Yeah, it's true.
It's funny that the two films that the three of us have talked about, this and Ghostbusters, both have this
big
tremendous love of New York.
Yes.
And really capture an element. Now, the element of New York that Harry Met Sally captures, it's very different from what Ghostbusters captures,
right.
But their love of New York is really clear. And one of the things Rob Reiner talks about is he talks a lot about in making this movie is going to lunch.
Yeah.
Is that rather than having lunch on the set, they always shot right near a really good restaurant. So he and Nora Ephron and the cast would go across the street to some great little Italian neighborhood place and have lunch. And you get the love of all of this. Oh, we're in this great place and let's celebrate it.
Yeah.
Going to the museum, going to the beautiful shots in Central Park in the fall. Like, all of those things are just so gorgeous.
I know you so well. That's the beginning of that park.
Of the Central Park. It's always fall in the movie.
Yeah.
No matter what, because you never see them in shorts. You never see them hanging out.
New Year's.
What I mean is fall, winter. Fall, winter. Fall, winter through the whole movie. And that's I think that's true. On purpose, because that's when you most want to be next to somebody. You want to feel that warmth and comfort is in the fall and winter, because you're cold. And you want someone close to you. You just feel that it's bundling up is nice.
It's a very primal take on romance. Listen, I don't feel like dating because I'm kind of hot right now. But when it gets cold, come back around. I'd love to cuddle.
There's not a lot of summer romances. I think this is the last thing you want. Funny. Someone on top, you all sweaty and stuff, you know, in summer.
Listen, that's how I feel. But
there are other people that think otherwise.
Maybe they do, I'm sure.
A lot of people think tropical beaches and bikinis is really romantic.
Well, I don't know about romantic. Certainly sexually style, you know, never mind.
The tropical beaches that just
got you on a thing. Let me digress a little bit, because you talked about it before, and it was one of my favorite moments, was when he says what guys are thinking about after they've had sex.
That's true.
And then they show Billy Crystal right after he's had sex with Meg Ryan, and just the I'm not doing Harry and Sally. I'm using the actors, but you know what I mean. And then when she kind of wakes up and he's like, "Well, I can't because I have plans right now, but I sure would love to see you later." And it's like, you're like, "Who are you?" He like delivers it in such a perfectly, we haven't been together as friends for years and years.
Right.
You know, but I'd love to take you to lunch later if you are available. And you know, it's like,
well, what's so weird about it, at least for me, is I go, he knows that he already told her about this thing.
Which is probably why he's like that.
Exactly. So he is trying to be, he's feeling this thing, I have to get the fuck out.
Yeah.
But he's trying to say it in a way, and it's a complete failure.
It's terrible. Yeah.
And she knows, and that's one of the great things about all the subtext, is she's already heard this thing, and she knows what's happening.
Yep.
Yep.
And so it's so painful to watch, because the problem with having been friends for a long time is they don't have these secrets that's coming to hide behind.
Yeah.
They know the other one's bullshit.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, I love the way he walks in there and like her he notices that her videos, cassettes have been alphabetized. I love that.
On index cards.
That's the little thing about Sally. But you're right, when they're having that uncomfortable lunch or dinner later, and
it was a mistake. I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah.
And yet, she's clearly not.
No. She's, and their inner dialogue before they get to that lunch or dinner or whatever is great too, because it lays the groundwork for that moment to happen where she goes, it's a mistake. It's, oh God, I'm so glad you said it. I'm so glad you said
And
that.
I wonder too, maybe you know about the split screen stuff with the phone calls. That was kind of used in like Brady Bunch
and
not in films and not at that level before that I remember.
I mean, there are films that do it, like Doris Day and Rock Hudson. There's a very
But
the four-way split screen that they do, so they did it all live, and the way they did it was they were on different little sets, and they had to link the sound through the phones so that they're actually hearing each other's dialogue.
Oh wow.
And the level of detail in terms of the interrupting and overlapping is so hard. It's 60 takes.
Oh my God. 60,
and it's all in one take. I mean, it's all one shot. So it's 60 takes shooting in four different locations, linked through these phones to get that.
And they wouldn't need to do that now.
No, I think you still have to do it.
You don't think there could be some CGI action that just puts all the things next to each other?
So I did in the assistants, we did a 7-way split screen of a phone call.
Right.
And I didn't know what I was getting into. And because what we did, as opposed to what they do in Harry and Sally, was we shot each part separately over a month. Mm. And we thought about the lensing, and we thought about the distance and focal length, so everything's framed the same way. But we didn't think about the rhythm of the dialogue. And, you know, actually, my wife, Karen, who we've already talked about, was the script supervisor. So she's doing the other side of the dialogue with each of the actors going around. And of course, she might be somewhat consistent, but she didn't know how Jane Seymour was going to do one side or how Joe Mantegna is doing the other side. And so when I went to put them all together as a 7-way split, they don't fit.
Yeah.
And so what happened, if you were to watch the scene, is what I'm doing is speeding up and slowing down the people that aren't talking subtly so that all of their reactions and they're coming in at the right moment. So if you're looking at the person who's talking, it all looks great. But if you really focus on people that aren't talking, you'll see, why are they suddenly moving so slowly?
Oh, interesting.
Because that's the only way I could get it to time out.
Right.
Timing is so hard. And in a thing like the Harry Met Sally one, it is, because they're overlapping and interrupting.
Yeah.
Like,
the pacing is beautiful.
Unbelievably hard to do. So 60 takes makes sense to me.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Jeez.
Can we bring up the couples that they interview?
Oh,
That was going to be one of my next.
And that was later, right? That was added after.
It was pretty early, because the first story comes from someone's father. It's like, okay, it's not Rob Reiner's father, but it's I forget who it was. So, mm-hmm. Oh, it's maybe the producer's father. That's actually their story of how they met. And so that's when the idea started coming. Originally, they're going to bring in real people to do it,
right,
and do improvs and stuff like that, or bring in people whose story it was.
Yeah.
And they tried to, and it was terrible.
And that's why I bring it up, because like, it's the rich tapestry of the film.
Yeah.
But I found out in doing the research for this film that those are not real people.
No, they're all
actors. And it broke my heart.
Totally. Me too.
It broke my heart.
I really thought they were just real people. Yeah.
They're all actors.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Because it's so believable. And you as a teacher of acting, and you as a teacher what you're directing, like, those people, in no way do you believe that they're acting. They look so real. No, especially the Asian couple. My God.
The Asian couple, and the one who's, when he starts and she finishes all the sentences for him. We grew up one block apart from each other. Never knew we were, it's so, oh my God.
I know.
That is so sad to hear. I did not know that.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I thought they were real. I'm sorry to have ruined that.
But, drop the mic. I'm out.
But now, unfortunately, now when you look at it, you're going to go, oh, you're right. This is all too perfect. You know the way you know about a good melon.
Oh, such a great line.
Because it's all one shot, and there's just no way that real people will hit it that well
in
an interview. Having interviewed a lot of people, we're not that good talking on the spot,
Well, I was going to say, so you say you see it at 18, and then you see it at 45, and you're now seeing even more than you saw then.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's really the... that's really the key to an amazing movie, is like, my 15-year-old niece has never had a friendship relationship kind of thing. I mean, maybe to the way you do in high school, like you're secretly in love with someone in science class, but not the way that you do as an adult. And I certainly hadn't at that point. And still, it was I loved it so much. I mean, mm-hmm. it probably just connected for me on the level of being so funny, loving them as a couple, loving, Carrie and Bruno, but now I see it, and it's a whole different, you just see so much more in it than I saw certainly when I was 20 or however old.
And in the stages too, like when they come back together and Sally's trying to ignore him on the plane, and he like makes
escalator.
By the way, really tough. That's a really hard shot.
Yeah,
oh, sure.
On the moving sidewalk.
The moving sidewalk.
Because you have to time moving past the people, and you have to get to the end at exactly. So the time, and you got to, you're dollying back on a moving sidewalk. It's like, that's a really hard.
I mean, but again, it made it such a great. As he kind of, he notices, and he's like, I'll stop walking.
I love when he pulls back.
Yeah. And he just backs up.
Then that's what's so great about the film is, once again, to me, it's so believable, the stages of life they're experiencing. Yeah. Being now older to watch that and see, yes, I remember that stage. I remember the 20s and 30s and 40s. They're completely different. And you're right. The way you would attack, or the way you, and the way he changes as a man, Billy does such a great job, and so does, obviously, Meg does as well, such a great job evoking that era and how you would as a human, as a man or as a woman, react in that, at that age, to that thing that's happening. When they run into each other in the bookstore, Billy is more relaxed.
Yeah.
He's lived through some shit. He's seen he's divorcing, right?
So he's less sure of himself. I think that's one of the big things, because the Billy we meet in the first two scenes he's super cocky.
Cocky,
and he's got explanations for everything,
of course.
And then the scene in the bookstore, it's like, oh, he's kind of broken now.
Yeah.
We're post Mr. Zero at this point.
Please.
Well, I think the other thing I was going to say too, is the movie allowed all of the characters to change.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, usually you have the Carrie Fisher who just is that for the whole movie.
Right.
There's just the character that's like always sleeping with the married guy and blah, blah. And this one, she ends up marrying somebody and having the love of her life.
Yeah.
And it's a whole different person from the beginning of the film. And they have four characters that do that.
Yeah.
Which is, just unusual these days. You don't get such depth allowed, I don't think.
I don't think we take the time.
No,
no,
you're right.
We really don't.
You take
way too much time doing other crap that I could.
There's so much plot. I mean, it's like, and to see how they advance, just the way Meg is with the guy whose name I just went out of my brain.
Joe.
The way she's with Joe at the airport is so sweetly romantic in a very youthful, this is princes and princesses sort of level of romance. And that is not the Sally that Harry marries.
No.
She's a very different person. And there's a line Harry has, which I love, on the plane. It's a very small line, which he's talking about, oh, I'm getting married. And he says, she's a lawyer. She's keeping her name. And It's like that is a really strange line.
Yeah.
And what it is to me is he's actually not happy that she's keeping her name.
Yes, it's the compromise.
He's like, but he's trying to pull it off like right. he is happy about it. And right there is like, here's all this depth of his relationship with this other woman who we haven't met yet and only meet very briefly. And yet you get it all just from this one. She's a lawyer. She's keeping her name.
Yeah.
That's not the swaggering kid that we met. He is changing.
He's changing, yeah.
His ideas, his perception of women are being challenged because he likes these other stronger women that are going to push back at him. And he is, and that's what I think is so interesting about his relationship with Bruno, too. Bruno is where he can feel still kind of like a man. Mm-hmm. And you see him in these other situations where he's constantly getting his knees cut out from under him, which humanizes him. And I think it's important because you introduce him as such a cocky, arrogant guy who wants to cheat on his girlfriend with her friend.
Amanda.
Oh, and which is so great when Meg can't even remember Amanda.
Don't stay with me, Joe. I can't even remember the name of someone who was so important to me that I wouldn't sleep with my best friend, whatever.
Yeah, but it's so, because that's Meg changing too. Yeah. Right? Because Meg didn't really like Amanda that much. She probably was doing it as a favor. And I love when she honks the horn at the beginning when they're kissing.
That's so brilliant.
That's such a great window into Sally's character that she has.
When the women have the lunch and you hear the women's sides of relationship stuff. Yeah. And, you know, then I don't remember if she's talking to... When she's like, I just, with Joe, and she said, we just always said, no, we're not going to have kids. We want to leave at a moment's notice and have sex on the kitchen floor. And they're like, and it's tile. It's very cold.
Very cold.
And it's like, that's exactly the kinds of things women talk about completely with each other.
Well, and this is the thing. It's occurred to me more as we're having this conversation that this is a kind of honest movie that I don't know that we had before, where people are just talking about the real deal of how we feel. I mean, just the two big ones is guys want to get up and leave and faking orgasms. Right. Those are big ones. But all the other ones that we're talking about, we're seeing so much insight into, because mostly men and women, because that's why I think this movie changes the world to some degree.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because we talk about these things now in a way that we really didn't talk about these things before.
Yeah.
Just women and men, I think I said last time, women use 2,500 more words a day than men.
I'm not surprised.
It's not. And I have a daughter now who is just never stops talking.
Yeah.
And I did not have, my son has not been that way. I've got to like bleed him for freaking anything. Mm. How are you? I'm good.
It's so funny. The guy culture, even, you know, today we've changed a lot. Guy culture is just different from woman culture. And I'm always fascinated because why I love this movie is that's why I love talking to women, because I love the other side of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's a level of guys being able to get together with guys as Billy Crystal gets together with Bruno Kirby, which is like, we're good.
Yeah.
Because we don't dig into the deep stuff that much. And so there's not, I know much more women who have much more conflict with their female friends than I know guys who have conflict with their
girlfriends. Because what are you going to have conflict about? You don't talk about shit. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, dude, you know, you get the feeling that it's women just talk to each other. There's much more of that than you have the one guy friend that you talk about your sex life with. Right. You don't talk to every guy.
No.
I don't think.
No.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I talk to everybody about everything.
Wow.
So that's my problem.
Well, that's why we have you on the podcast.
Because right, I never stop talking.
I want to talk about the sad part of the movie. Because it gets really sad.
Yeah.
Because you have this great friendship and then they sleep together.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's
so bad. And she has to go get the Christmas tree by herself.
He's calling her.
He has to pay for what he did.
Yeah.
And she has to be strong to not give in because she has to teach him how to love her.
I don't
want to
be your consolation prize.
What? She has to teach him how to love her. That's how I see it.
So I want to back up. I'm not saying you're wrong.
I'm a crime and punishment guy, though.
What is he paying for? What did he do?
He's paying for sleeping with her and being insensitive about it. Yeah. And he was. When he brought up, who's the dog in the... I'm the dog. That's such a great back and forth between them. And that lets you into a... I'm not saying it has to mean that, but why does it have to mean everything? Because it does, Harry. Because it does. And that's true. That's how she's... And he should have known the moment he decided to sleep with her, this is the kind of woman... I have 20 years of friendship with this woman.
Because he says, you're the kind of woman who I have to cuddle. I have to stay.
And that's the thing. He knew what he was doing.
And he knows that she knows that he's lying about the squash game or whatever.
Yes.
And of course he has to fucking pay. He has to understand that, like...
I think you are correct that he has to pay, but I think there's something else going on, which is her trying to reconcile herself with her own feelings. You know, it's not just that she has to make him pay enough and then she's going to be in a relationship with him. It's that she was deeply hurt. And, you know, we should back up to, they're both people that were really hurt by their previous relationships.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and one of the things that's happening in the course of their budding friendship is that they have not dealt with the pain
right.
in their own ways. Like, Harry's like sleeping around with people but being really depressed.
Right.
And Sally's being cheery and not breaking down and crying, and both of them are in a level of denial.
Yeah.
And then they finally reach, you know, their climax, which is when they sleep together, and now they are faced with the potential for more hurt. And I think Sally is protecting herself. You know, she's feeling these things. She does obviously love him, and then is going, no, we can't, this can't happen. You know?
I don't think she's going, no, this can't happen. I think that she was really happy. They had sex. She thought, this is the next level.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
and then he does what he does. Yeah. And then she has to close down, because if he had not done that thing, if he hadn't said, you know, I'd really love for us to have dinner together later, right. if you're available, I think she would have been like, now we're in a relationship. Mm-hmm. Now we're dating and it's all good. And instead he does his thing. And that's when she's like, oh, no, no, that's not who I will be. Right. I won't be that person in his life. We're not just going to go back now to the buddy system.
But I don't think she's just punishing him when it's not. She's. Not,
I don't mean punishing him. I mean saying, no, I will not be in that kind of relationship.
Well, and I think she's really afraid of being hurt again.
Well, she was. That's my point. She got hurt
by him in that moment. No, I totally agree with that. Yeah.
Jackass.
He was.
God. And, you know, of course you loved him and he left those messages and he's like, maybe you're trapped under, you know,
oh my God, this is whatever, great. A heavy object or something.
Heavy object, and you can't get to the phone, and you do feel for him, but he also is really stupid.
Yeah, and he has to come to her on her terms, because he's the one that made the mistake of sleeping with her and not being responsible about it.
Well, and slept that's with my her point. In a moment of tremendous vulnerability.
Yeah.
Right. He took advantage of her, and he was a smarter man, a more emotionally educated man, stops that moment.
Yeah.
Or sleeps with her and understands what he's doing.
That
and
it lets has
her,
changed.
Yes, and lets yeah. her no, lead he, the situation at that point.
He has a clear freak out that's yes, hugely destructive.
Yeah.
And I think he earns his way back.
I do too.
The run yeah. on New Year's.
Oh, man.
That's like, so I don't think we can, there's, I think that hovers over us in all romantic things to me. Like that right. run through the night is that's it
with yeah. one of the best versions of It Had to Be You by yeah. Sinatra, an older Sinatra.
It's not Sinatra.
Yes, it is.
No, it's Harry Connick Jr.
No. In that sequence, that is Sinatra when he's running. It's old Sinatra from the
90s. I don't know.
And I'll play it for you if you want. I have it.
You have the movie version?
I have Sinatra's version, yeah.
No, absolutely. I know his version, but I don't yeah. remember Sinatra, because Harry Connick sings it, that is on the soundtrack.
This is the moment that you put in the scene from the movie.
Yeah, right. So Sinatra starts. So we won't find it now, but I will edit it, and I will find the scene. If you want to look up the answer.
I'm going to listen while I look it up, because that is crazy talk.
Listen, take a moment.
He just wants to be right so much. All right,
so we're going
to
pause. So we're going to pause for a moment, and when we come back, we're going to have the answer to this question.
Turn it up.
It had to be you. It had to be you. I wandered around and I finally found the somebody who
you still.
All right, we are back in and we have the answer.
I was, and this doesn't happen often, wrong.
My mom introduced me to Sinatra when I was 14 years old,
and literally
it's been
the man.
No
oh, okay.
He had come through. I think he had come through in a concert, and my mom had said to me how much she loved Sinatra, and then I watched a PBS concert of him. And from that point forward, I became the greatest, hugest Sinatra fan on the planet.
Wow.
And so when it plays in the movie, it's always one of my yeah. favorite moments to find. Just love like at the end moment. Of Ocean's 13, when they play that Sinatra song at the end of Ocean's 13, it's just perfect. When you hit the right older Sinatra, it's a fucking Ruth Chris steak. It's just fantastic.
That's a good steak.
That is a good steak. It's covered steak. With butter.
That's right. You enjoy that steak.
Oh, I would.
Wait, can we not? I can't believe we haven't talked about the game.
Baby Fishmouth?
The party scene. I mean, because again, that was another thing.
I still use that. Oh,
yeah, especially when we have game nights. Another brilliant way to watch them watch each other's dates.
Yeah.
And she's Emily. She's Miss Emily, or whatever.
Her reaction is so
That's
great.
Rob Reiner's daughter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That is also so Gary Marshall's niece. So she's in all like all the Gary Marshall movies too.
She was that old enough to be
Well, and she's still 15 years, 20 years younger than Billy Crystal is in that scene.
Yeah, she's like 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really funny scene and great to watch. I mean, first of all, the scene is funny.
Yeah.
And Baby Fishmouth is sweeping the nation is something that Karen and I say to each other all the time.
Do we know if any of that was improvised?
Improv. Yeah. That's definitely improv. The whole game is improv. Another interesting thing about the movie, in many of the original drafts, they did not get together.
Wow, really?
Really?
Yeah.
I would have shot somebody.
No doubt.
In the head.
I agree. And this is
a terrible film.
I 100% agree. And there's an interesting thing, and I've never been able to figure out a way to talk about it well, but there is a kind of giving the audience what they want, which is wrong. And there is a kind where you must give the audience what they want. There are all sorts of versions, particularly in the 19th century, where they had Romeo and Juliet live. You know, because they didn't want to, so they rewrite the play because it's too much of a bummer for them to die. And that's wrong because they, because that play, they're supposed to die.
You don't get the lesson if they don't die.
But in this case, if you have them not get together, you are betraying the audience.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they found, and they realized it, at, you know, as they were getting towards the shooting, it's like, oh no, they have to be together.
Are there
scenes? You know,
no, they never shot that. Shoot it. Before.
That was the same with like Thelma and Louise. They were, there was going to be not
really?
That they didn't die at that. They just get arrested, and you know, there's something about that ending that was
That's like that has to happen.
I as sad as it was, I couldn't imagine it being like, oh, now we envision them in jail for you know, however many years.
They have a and there are other movies where I'm watching the movie, I go, you chickened out.
Yeah.
Like you went the easy, like one of them that always occurs to me is Clint Eastwood in The Line of Fire.
Oh yeah,
I'm convinced that he was supposed to die. So I want to ask one last question. Can men and women be friends without the sex part getting in the way?
Yes. I firmly believe that. Myself, personally, from my own personal experience, yes.
No. If I hadn't been married for as long as I've been married, if I had been single for as much time, I would have had so many sexual... I would have slept with so many people.
She would have laid waste to this group of friends.
Because it's true. Because the reality is, for women, and maybe this is why, for women, sex is usually about loving somebody who they're, you know, who they are as a like they're funny or their talent or whatever.
Sure.
And so when you become friends with somebody, you love them. There's some part of them that you love. And, you know, it's the saying, women become attracted to the men they love. Men fall in love with the women they're attracted to.
I say yes, because for me, the deepest friendships I have are with women I don't find attractive and would never want to sleep with. And because I think I'm 51% female, 49% male. I really do feel that way because I'm more sensitive, more vulnerable than most guys I meet. It's the most difficult thing I had to go through my entire life. That's why I almost killed myself a couple of times when I was younger, because I couldn't handle the Civil War of the vulnerability, the desire to be vulnerable and sweeter and nicer, warring with this other part of myself that my dad tried to bring out, the anger, the fight, the defense,
the
Latin stuff. Yeah. The military stuff too. So until I got therapy, thanks to Sarah, one of my greatest friends, I didn't know how to figure that out. And so for me, but I've always had this, I've always been better friends with women I don't find attractive. The deepest friendships I have with women are the women I do not find attractive, because I can let all that go.
Yeah.
And just relax and just be myself.
Sarah's one of the most beautiful women.
Absolutely.
That's what's so crazy to me.
Listen, and aesthetically, they're beautiful women. Absolutely. You know, objectively, they're absolutely attractive, beautiful women. It's not a person. It's obviously just whatever, for whatever, the way I'm built. And so for me, that's why the film is so interesting to me, because I've never experienced that. Yet it's still such a fantastic
film. You and Sarah will experience it.
It's so funny. What was your description that women become?
Women fall in love. Women become attracted to the men that they love.
Yeah.
Men fall in love with the women they're attracted to.
Yeah. I'm totally a woman based on that description.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's very much my experience. And my answer to this question is that yes, men and women can be friends, but the sex thing is there.
Absolutely.
That it's there to some degree. It's going to be there. You're going to have that thought. It's going to go through your head. You're going to have, and because I've had lots of women friends over my life, mm-hmm. and navigating that, it's like, yeah, there's some attraction there. And you know, I mean, I've been married for a long time too, so you don't act on it, mm-hmm. but it's not that it's like, yeah, that's there. It's, it is a thing that doesn't, like his description in the car of, so she can be, he can be friends with someone he doesn't find attractive. No, you pretty much want to nail them.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You pretty much want to nail them too.
But I think that's also a 20-year-old. And maybe sure. he's different.
And is true. There's a different when you because, you know, being not a 20-year-old yeah. person anymore, there is a whole different level of what even shows up
yeah.
when you meet people now. You know, when yeah. you meet a new person and that they're funny or whatever, it's just like, it's just a different, we're kind of made differently.
Kind of been and you've been through some stuff. And as a guy, yeah. your testosterone is going down yeah. and down yes. and down after 40. And
it's amazing how your brain all of a sudden shows up. It's like, testosterone goes down.
Right. Yeah. And you know, you've had sex. It's like, you've yeah. had a lot of sex yeah. by this point and you know that it's great, but it's not,
yeah.
you know, going to change the world. I think when you're in your 20s, you think something different. Sex is like, whoa.
Right.
But in the case of Harry Met Sally, one sex does change the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. That everything is different from that point forward.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's been building to it.
Vicky, final thoughts.
Final thoughts. I wish this movie would be released again yeah. in the theaters. I wish this was one of those movies you could go to in a movie theater again. Because the visuals and mm-hmm. it's just such a classic. I would love to see it in a big theater again.
Great. John, your final thoughts.
I would say it is one of my absolute favorite films ever. And I always smile when it comes on. I always watch it. And it absolutely has to be considered a classic at this point. Yes, it's an 80s film, but I think it's a classic film. And in the same ways of what It Happened One Night is, you know, or Bringing Up Baby, it's a classic romantic comedy film. And it is, in my opinion, the greatest of them all. Bar none. And I don't think any film will ever come close to touching it. And if they ever try to remake it, I'll set fire to the studio. They'll never, never capture the magic of this film. And I think that's what it is, Steve, for me. It's magic.
Yeah.
And it's a combination of all these actors and directors and producers and writers and collaborators at the pinnacle of their talents coming together to create this very perfect, very honest, very vulnerable, and very one-of-a-kind romantic movie, as you said earlier, Steve. Yeah. It is not something you see in romantic comedies, the exploration and the decades-long progression mm-hmm. of a relationship to a romantic ending.
Yeah, I, for me, this goes into what I think is a very small category of this might be a perfect movie.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of movies that I adore, but there's moments and you're like, oh, that didn't mm-hmm. quite hit, and that's a little slow, and this is, but I love the movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a false moment that I can think of in this movie. Mm-hmm. It never drops the ball. Every line is great. Every moment is hitting on all cylinders. Yep. It is so funny
right.
and so intelligent and so touching and so lovingly made. Mm-hmm. And it's just, and it is one where I could watch it and then just start it again.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
watch it again.
Absolutely.
Because it's a joy. But we would love to hear what you think. So please visit us on our Facebook page. It's The Cinephiles, The Cine-Files. You can reach me on Twitter at SR Morris. John, where can they reach you?
You can always find me at The Rocha Says, TheRocha Says. You can see all the shows I host or co-host.
Yeah, Vicky.
Yeah. Well, you can find me in my kitchen. But besides that, I'm not cooking, mind you.
No.
You can go to my website, www.victoriagarciakelleher.com.
Oh, and where do you teach acting?
I teach at Leslie Kahn and Company, which is a Hollywood acting studio that will change your life.
So if you want to become a great actor, then you'll start
it's
with Leslie Kahn.
It's a good place to start.
And Vicky's classes. as always, please leave us a review on iTunes. They really help us out. Tell your friends, and we will see you next time on The Cinephiles with another great film.